Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This show is presented by SAP. Who am I and how am I feeling? I'm Clive Owen and I'm great, thanks. What if businesses could really understand how their customers feel? It's a thing. It's SAP Experience Management. For more, go to sap.com/XM.
You are listening to The Bird Calls on the Off the Glass, Nothing But Net, and 5x5 podcast networks. For more on your Pelicans, go to iTunes, search The Bird Calls, and subscribe today. Time is the charm. At least that's what they say, isn't it, guys? What's up, Pels fans? Welcome to another episode of The Bird Calls. I'm your host and contributor to thebirdrights.com, Preston Ellis. And today, once again, we are recapping games, you guys. Can you believe it? To help out, we have with us our editor-in-chief, Mr. Ali Cosell. Ali Cosell is calling in today. We've been having some technical problems. Everybody's having technical problems except Kevin. Old, reliable Kevin. Ali, how's it going, man?
It's gone all right. As you've mentioned, I'm a little frustrated, and this is one of many things that have gone wrong today. So,
hi, this is Scott Trout, CEO of the domestic litigation firm Cordell & Cordell. There are many life changes that can happen after divorce that make it difficult or impossible to uphold requirements of your divorce decree. The orders issued in a divorce are based on the facts presented at that time, but the circumstances used in issuing those orders can obviously change. If you feel a modification to your court orders might be necessary, talk to us at Cordell & Cordell.
Contact CordellCordell.com. 1065 East Hillsdale Boulevard, Suite 310, Foster City, California, 94404.
Anyway, it's good to be talking to you guys.
All right, here we go, you guys. Let's pick it up here. Kevin, of course, you finally have a place to watch your game. You've got your TV in the mail. You've got it on the dresser or the entertainment center, whatever the kids are calling it nowadays. And although the two of us are having our own league pass troubles, we still have an opportunity to talk about some games. We still saw the Bulls game. What is up with you, sir? Tell us a bit about your home and how it's progressing.
Well, it's getting there. The living room is almost complete, except for, you know, hanging decorations up. I'm just waiting. My sofa comes in on Friday, and then I'll have a singular complete room in my house that's ready to roll and live in. So that's great. But yeah, I mean, it's going well. I like it here. Excited about it, and but way more excited about talking about basketball than my house.
Definitely. All you need is one room. That's what John Lennon said anyway. Let's do a lightning quick recap of both games. Pelicans played fairly well against the Bulls in the first three quarters. Then they got shellacked in the fourth. 128-116 was the final score. I think the fourth quarter was somewhere around 37-20, 37-18. Ollie will weigh on that in a bit. AD and Drew were their dominant usual selves in both of these games, and we got a great glimpse into what Julius Randle can do offensively, not just as a rim crasher, but also as a facilitator. He was looking pretty good, especially in the Bulls game. The Pelicans allowed a whopping 72 points in the paint and committed 18 turnovers. Not ideal. Game two against the Hawks, the Pels shot a putrid 37% and 21% from the field, respectively, and they suffered some minor injuries to Jahlil Okafor. I corrected myself, Ed, in the Bulls game. I'm never going to get that right. Julius Randle and Frank Jackson in the Hawks game. Drew and AD, again, looking otherworldly in, once again, a 116-102 defeat. Ali, that's wrapped up. Let's start with you. What are your initial takeaways from the first glimpses of our Pels?
They've been mixed. I've been pleasantly surprised for the most part by the core guys. If you just eliminate the second half, pretend like they didn't happen, teams actually played fairly well. Especially when you consider that nobody really gives a damn about putting in 100% effort defensively in these games. And you can kind of notice it with AD out there. He's kind of let a couple guys get around him, kind of let some guys score on him. Even though I know in that first game against the Bulls, he had, what, like 3 steals, 2 blocks. But in general, and it hasn't just been him. You've noticed Julius Randle missed a few rotations, stuff like that. So that's the preseason motions, you know, going through just, you know, games that don't count. So you don't want to look at that too much. But offensively is where I think the team's done really well, and it's kind of surprising the results they've had when they haven't shot the ball well. I mean, outside of Drew Holiday and then Frank Jackson in that first game, nobody's made anything from the outside. Ejuan Moore is cold as ice. Same with Ian Clark and whoever else you want to throw or list right there. They haven't contributed from the outside, like it's the shooting the ball. And Preston, you nailed it. Then with the Pelicans giving up millions of points inside, it's kind of made for these lopsided scores and these losses that fans are looking at. But again, you don't want to look at that. You just want to focus on how the starters played, and they played well. Davis and Holiday offensively have basically picked up right where they left off in the postseason, especially Drew Holiday. I mean, he's looking like he's ready for another playoff run. Julius Randle has looked really good. He's looked efficient. He's been able to push the ball in transition, find open guys. Elfrid Payton played better, definitely in that Hawks game, even though I wasn't able to watch it entirely. I was having connection issues with that, too, so go figure. But he's been looking a lot better. Like I said, in that Chicago game, he looked a little tentative. He wasn't really able to find guys. He made a couple of easy kind of, or I should say bad turnovers. And then Ejuan Moore has been kind of cold. But other than that, you just want to look at how the guys are playing together, and they're pushing the ball together well. They're being aggressive offensively. We've seen the pace. I mean, it's incredible. 115 possessions in one game and like around 120 against the Hawks. So they're playing at a crazy pace. They're just not having too many shots go down. And of course, like I said, they're not caring about defense at the moment.
Yeah, just like the Pelicans, the Bird Calls podcast and our connections are also in preseason form. Let's go back to Kevin and let's address some of these same things. Obviously, Ali listed in some of the role players and their contributions. The most important takeaway, of course, as he mentioned, was how spectacular Drew Holiday and Anthony Davis have been in limited minutes on both ends of the floor. Talk about your initial assessments. I know it might be relegated to the Bulls game as we had trouble with the Hawks connection, but talk a bit about what you've seen, the pace, whether you think it's sustainable over the course of a season. We know that a lot of these guys, you know, we're only playing between 15 and 25 minutes. Do you think that's something that the Pelicans' main eight guys can sustain over 48 minutes?
Yeah, I think, obviously you're going to wear down running a lot, but I think a lot of the guys we have are in very good shape and they tend to not really wear down. We don't have like DeMarcus Cousins anymore who noticeably would be tired at the end of games. We're playing higher paces. You have, you know, a supremely fit Julius Randle. Drew Holiday is also in great shape. Anthony Davis never seems to get tired, you know, so I'm not that concerned about it. Plus, I think they'll find ways to get them rest during games more now that you have three big guys that you could stagger and then a guy like Okafor coming off the bench that could also give some rest. And then in the guard rotation, you know, you have Elfrid Payton, Ian Clark, Frank Jackson, Jared Jack. You have these guys that you can rely on to rotate in and out. So I'm not that concerned about the pace wearing them down. I am excited about the pace because I think it creates a huge advantage going against other teams, especially teams that are trying to match up big for big with us, because there's not that many athletic bigs that can hang with the three that we have for at that accelerated pace for a long time without suffering when they sub those guys out. So I think that's going to be a huge advantage for the Pelicans. As far as just overview, Drew Holiday looked incredible in the Chicago game. I didn't see any of the Hawks game because I was at work, and then I've been trying to watch it on League Pass, but all they give you is a recap, and it's mainly just misses from Trae Young for 6 minutes or something. For some reason, they thought that was a good idea in the recap, but I don't know. So I haven't seen much of that. There's barely any Pelicans highlights in that. Anthony Davis looked like he was playing at maybe 60% of his effort level and still looked incredible. So that's phenomenal. Frank Jackson was exciting to watch. I think, you know, he's going to be a surprise for the national media, not so much for local media, which I wrote about in the roundtable that posted today about, you know, surprise players on the Pelicans team. And Elfrid Payton showed me some stuff. You know, there are things that weren't so great, but he had some nice moments in there. And like you said, you know, nobody's really trying super hard on defense right now. As far as the fringe guys, I'm still pretty high on Garland Green. I think he's a guy that impacts the games in multiple ways, but in a ways that aren't so obvious to the eye. you know, he's just one of those glue guys that everything seems to work better when he's on the court. I guess those are my biggest takeaways from that, from this.
All right. I couldn't tell if you were done, but before we move on, I've got something for Ali, but just something that kind of tickled me. There's a tweet by Joe Pasternak right now on Twitter where, Vlade Divac is signing a player, I guess, to fill out the training camp roster. And he has his whiteboard in the background with his list of top prospects in the 2018 NBA draft. So I'm just getting a kick out of that. I hope you guys get a chance to look at that. But going back to what you were saying about Elfrid Payton, I feel like this is the most important thing to take away from the preseason, or the most important question to ask, Ollie. And obviously, we've got some great questions from Tejeda, as well as some of our other guys addressing Elfrid Payton and his play. I want to dive a little bit deeper. He's obviously getting the most run. He played 25 minutes against the Bulls and 24 minutes against the Hawks, better than everybody else by about 4 minutes. He carried a heavy minus on the court in his brief time. And obviously he did a lot of the things that we expect. A lot of the, you know, 4-8-4 and I think 7-7-4 were his numbers. No turnovers in the second game, which was a really positive sign. In the first game, he had 3 early turnovers, a bit of those miscues that David Grubb and I were talking about. But overall, you can see the court vision. You can see the spacing. You can see that he can stay in front of his defender when playing man-to-man matchups. Ali, talk a bit more about what you've seen. Is this guy the signal caller for the Pelicans? We're going to dive a bit deeper to Kevin after this, but just go deeper into your initial impressions of this guy who's going to have a considerable amount to do with the Pelicans' success this season.
Preston, I think he's going to be fine, and I'm not just looking at a couple of games. I'm also going by what I saw in training camp every day, and he was definitely more aggressive. He made a little less mistakes in training camp. I think so. Honestly, what I take from that is in the first game against the Bulls, he maybe had a little bit of nerve. Maybe got, I mean, you know, I don't want to guess here, but there was something probably at play that kind of, you know, took him off his game a little bit. And as you mentioned, he played a lot better against the Hawks. So I guess the best way to describe Payton is you have to ask yourselves, what do you, the Pelicans need from him? You know, they don't need him to do exactly what Rajon Rondo did. And in fact, I don't think you even really want that. But the Pelicans need somebody just to push the pace, be able to find and hit the open man, and play just with consistent effort. And of course, I think my fourth one that I had listed in the season preview was to be more versatile defensively. And you know what? Payton can do all of those things. So if he can handle that, if he's up to the challenge for just those four things, the Pelicans are going to be happy with that. For $3 million for a starting point guard that they didn't expect to throw into that role, but now obviously they have to with Rondo out there in L.A., he's got that task, and I think he's going to be up for it. Like I said, you don't want to take too much from the game, but the biggest thing I did was the fact that his effort was there. You know, I remember watching some games after talking to you about Elfrid Payton at times, especially over the summer, from his playing days back in Orlando and then also what he did a little bit with Phoenix. And the effort just wasn't there. And you were right to basically, and anybody else, kind of throw him under the bus. But I have not seen that Payton at all, like I said, in training camp or these games. So I think overall Pelicans fans have to be hopeful that he's going to kind of fill Rajon Rondo's shoes, but in a different way, and probably a better way if he completely lives up to all those four tasks that I mentioned.
All right, just some more breaking news in regards to that Vlade Divac whiteboard, this scandal that's taking place right now on Twitter. There's also a photo of himself next to the whiteboard with a picture of him posing as if he's Don Corleone, and it says the Vlad father on it. I mean, this is just getting better and better. Kevin, there's a question from Tejeda that I want you to address. It says, this is his first question. He's got a second one we'll get to a bit later. He says, hypothetically, if Payton struggles, what adjustment to the lineups do you think the coaches would make?
All right. This sort of ties into an article I'm working on right now. It's sort of a different view of how to analyze rosters and players using human design charts, which is not something that I necessarily believe in, but it's something I'm interested in. I like to learn about different ways of thought that people analyze things. And this is a thing that comes up with Drew Holiday, is that he can be a lead guard, but he can't start off as a lead guard. The way his chart, his human design chart reads, which I'll explain more in detail later on, obviously, as I'm writing this piece now, it dictates that he, once he gets going, he can be the leader and the facilitator, but he needs a kickstart. And so that's why we've seen, and we've seen evidence of this, obviously, where, you know, people say, well, he's fine on the ball, you know, when we have Rondo off the court in fourth quarters, those sort of things later on in the game. But we've seen when he's been tasked to start the offense, he has trouble. So my thoughts are this: if for some reason Elfrid Payton either gets hurt or just can't live up to the role he's supposed to have, then I think you bring in Jarrett Jack to play that sort of Emeka Okafor role that we saw last season, where he's a starter by name, but he comes in and plays maybe like 4 minutes, 5 minutes, gets Drew going, and then Drew takes over and is mainly the point guard for the rest of the first half while he's out on the floor. And then same thing in the second half, you start off with Jarrett Jack again for another 4 or 5 minutes, and then it's Drew's show there on out whenever he's on the court. And I think that we've seen that work with Rondo when we had the Yank Rondo, and I think, you know, it's something that his chart shows, which I'll explain that in the article. I don't want to go too much into detail of that because it's very complicated, but it's something that I think would work, you know, starting Jarrett Jack or Frank Jackson can win that out, but I think you go with the veteran at first that way.
All right, I like it. Good stuff. Looking forward to that article. Let's go ahead and let's continue with some of the questions we have from some of our guys. Before we get into some of the injuries, Darius Miller, Nikola Mirotic, as well as how Solo is progressing from that hamstring injury that kept him to just around 20 games last season. This question is from Matthew Millay. I hope I said that right. I probably didn't. He said, what is your predicted starting lineup for the Pels? Who will be our sixth man of the year? And we're going to include this with Hot Pelican Takes. He says, does Randall in the starting lineup speak to his potential impact this season and future with the Pelicans? The reason I want to bring this up, Ollie, is obviously Nikola Mirotic has been held out of the first two games with his Achilles tendinosis. It's not considered serious. I would think he would be back for the regular season opener against the Houston Rockets. You know this a bit better than I do. My question is, based on what we've seen from Randall in the starting lineup, do you think now it's pretty well solidified that Nikola Mirotic is going to be in that six-man role with Randall in the starting lineup?
I think so. I mean, I remember us talking about this as soon as the Pelicans signed him back in July. I had a feeling he was going to be the starter for several reasons. But now it just makes infinitely more sense when you consider that Alvin Gentry wants to run at the fastest pace possible. And by the way, when we asked him about the pace, if he was happy with it, he thinks they can go even faster. He thinks that they can have even better, like, 4 minutes first. So that tells me that Randall's just a much better fit for doing that, because you can't have one guy pushing the pace. You basically need the whole team to kind of have that gang rebound mentality and just turn and go and be able to make those type of passes. And Randall is honestly a lot better at doing that than Mirotic. So you're not necessarily looking for the floor spacing, because you're looking to strike quickly anyway. You're going to have mismatches. You're going to have lanes open. So Randall just seems to fit that role better. And I think, honestly, he's probably in better physical shape just by looking at the two in terms of athleticism and everything. So, especially with Mirotic dealing with that ankle, which, by the way, guys, it's a non-issue. He was shooting around today after practice. Alvin Gentry told us that both he and Darius Miller went through practice fully and that they will be back and playing on Friday against the Knicks. So there's nothing to worry on that front. But yes, Preston, I think that the starters that we saw in these preseason games are the ones we're going to see to start the season. Elfrid Payton at point, Drew Holiday at the two guard, each one manning the small forward, and then Julius Randle and Anthony Davis being the bigs down low. And then Mirotic, of course, is going to be that sixth man off the bench. And he's going to see plenty of minutes. The rotations will be there as to where he may even see more minutes than Julius Randle at times. It'll probably depend upon both the matchup and how well each guy's playing. So that I don't want anybody to read anything into. All these guys are going to see the minutes, but just to get the details out there, I do believe, yes, that what we're seeing here in preseason, that's the lineup we're going to see start the regular season.
Kevin, I want to address, I'm going to let you continue to talk about what Ali was saying, but based on everything that Ali just said, with Nikola Mirotic coming off the bench, I really have enjoyed what I've seen from Frank Jackson, not just in his brief summer league stint, but also in game one against the Bulls, just the way that he pushes the tempo every single time he gets the ball. You see him sprinting up the court, sometimes making full court passes to get the offense set in the half court. What have you seen from Frank Jackson? How electric do you think a Pelicans bench could be that consists of a shooter like Darius Miller alongside Nikola Mirotic and Frank Jackson?
Well, I've been very excited by Frank Jackson, too. His athleticism was definitely on display. His speed, his quickness, his decisiveness getting up the court. I think he was playing with a lot of nerves, which is very much expected considering, you know, his injury problems in college and kept them all out of last year and then even in summer league. So I think, you know, there was some layups that he missed that he would have normally made had he not been so, you know, jacked up and full of energy. Once it slows down for him, I think he's going to be really good. I think he's going to be a nice piece for the Pelicans coming off the bench. And, you know, adding him, if him and Mirotic are coming off the bench and he plays up to the, you know, that level that we expect him to. And then, look, I don't expect him to be, you know, some breakout, super breakout star or something in his first year, but I think he's going to give you moments of excitement. I think he's going to fill a nice role for the Pelicans. I think he's going to improve upon what we were getting out of Ian Clark last season. And if you get that from him and Mirotic coming off the bench, and then if Darius Miller can find that stroke again and add maybe one other thing to his game, then I think, you know, you're looking at a pretty nice three-man bench. And then don't forget that also Jahlil Okafor will be coming off the bench as well, which is another, you know, guy who looks like he's gonna be able to abuse people down low and contribute well. And, you know, he was attacking the offensive glass, so all those things combined, I think you got a nice little bench unit there. Plus you still have Ian Clark and you still have Solomon Hill, who you know, hopefully will return to being a pretty good defensive player and hopefully add some on the offensive end as well.
All right, let's talk about Solomon Hill and Jahlil Okafor, as you were just mentioning. Those are the guys that I left off that initial bench unit. Ali, I know that we were expecting a lot of Solomon Hill. We were expecting him to return to his 2015-16 form. He was talking about how much stronger his hamstrings gotten. Jamel McMillan was telling us last summer how much better his three-point stroke had gotten. I did like some of his touch passes in game one. He got the ball and he quickly found a cutter. There was one possession specifically where he got the ball at the top of the baseline and he weaved his way behind a defender, got a nice bounce pass. I want to say it was Jahlil Okafor. Honestly, I don't remember. But anyway, he had good court vision. He got the ball out of his hands quickly. Other than that, there just wasn't much he contributed offensively in terms of shooting. He wasn't very good. He did hit 1-3 and just a lot of flailing while chasing rebounds and sort of stuff. So we need him to put it together. Also address Jahlil Okafor. We didn't get a large sample size. We did get a couple of highlights. Of course, the dunk over Wendell Carter and the big rejection. Talk about those two, what you've seen from them, and where do you think their place will be on this team come October 17th?
Well, Solomon Hill has underwhelmed. After seeing him play decently in training camp, and he came on kind of in the last couple of the final days of the week, I was expecting him to actually play a little bit better. And all we've seen is he's made only one shot out of, I think, 9 attempts, and of which 8 were three-pointers. I do want to say that he has grabbed 7 rebounds. So when you look at how many minutes he's played about 36 in all. 7 rebounds is actually a good mark for him. That's something I could live with. And as you mentioned, Preston, he did have a couple of nice passes, especially in that first game that generated some easy offense for other guys. So he's been a mixed bag, but again, to me, he's underwhelmed simply because he hasn't created any turnovers and he's going up against second units and playing largely in the second halves against, you know, and it's the Bulls and the Hawks. So he should be able to actually kind of, you know, I don't want to say he's not going to be Kevin Durant out there, but he should be able to, you know, do more positives. He should be able to score some more. He should be able to get to the rim and maybe have a couple attempts there. Just do something, you know. And I don't think physically it's an issue. As he told us on media day, his injured leg is actually now stronger than this other one is currently. So that's not an issue now. Is it whether it's a confidence or is it just he's super rusty? We don't know. It could be both of those things. But we've got to hope that he gets out of his funk, because I've got to think that the Pelicans' coaching staff is very eager to utilize him quite often, because Etuan Moore, as we all know, is kind of a bit undersized. And the Pelicans in general kind of had those problems at small forward last season, where they were just abused defensively. Darius Miller wasn't able to provide that. And especially if he wasn't making his three, the Pelicans really had a hole behind Etuan Moore. So the hope is Hill can do it. And he probably still can. It's only been two preseason games. But you just want to see this guy find his confidence and find that role. Because honestly, he looks like he's playing at a different speed to me, guys. I swear, you know, you see the starters go out there and they're running and all the decisions are quick. When Solo was out there, everything seemed to really slow down when the ball got in his hands. And he wasn't the only one. There was a lot of other people that he was playing with. They kind of did the same thing. But again, you just want more. You want to see more out of Solomon, because he was counted on to be a big part of this rotation last year before he got injured. And of course, coming off the injury, still, you know, owed a lot of money for two more years. So you kind of want to get some return on that investment if you're the Pelicans. At least see that defensive stopper that you kind of saw 2 years ago that can guard about three or four positions and do it pretty well. And also maybe hit the occasional jump shot. As like I said, he's 1 of 8 so far in preseason. Not a good start. As for Jahlil Okafor, he's impressed me and a lot of other people, including Alvin Gentry. The Pelicans were not sure if he was going to fit into this system, but it's all but guaranteed that he's going to make the roster. Now there's been a couple of innuendos dropped. And for instance, when we asked today, will this possibly affect Okafor making the team? Alvin Gentry quietly said no. So he's made the team. And I don't think there was really any doubt when you consider, you know, who the competition is for the fourth big man minute. And Alexia Jens is one of them, and he's not even ready to go, let alone, I don't know if anybody can trust him coming off a completely lost year for him. And then you've got Shek Diallo, who honestly has, I don't think there's been anybody else that's been more disappointing than Shek Diallo so far early in this preseason. So the Pelicans need Okafor, and what it sounds like is he'll be back in about a week's time. Gentry already alluded to that he's a quick healer, and that's kind of unusual around these parts. So it sounds like everything's on the up and up regarding him. And like I said, he's instant offense. This guy can actually make some passes. I know some training camp, he was kind of filling almost a Julius Randle type of role. The only thing he can't do is shoot, I would say, from 16 feet and beyond. Even on his practice shots, you know, after the scrimmaging, and they're just shooting around, he had a tough time making any of those shots, especially beyond the three-point line. I think I recalled him missing 8 or 10 straight. So that's never going to be a part of his game, but thankfully it doesn't have to be. He just has to be able to do the dirty work down low, kind of grab those offensive rebounds, just make himself to be a big target and score within 10 feet and in and make the right passes. And defensively, of course, we just want to see that effort. That's something that was lacking both in Philadelphia and Brooklyn. And from what I've seen, he's done just that. He's kind of impressed you with that effort, just like Elfrid Payton has. That these guys are out there to prove something. They know that they've had a very rough start to their careers, and they know they're in probably in danger of getting out of the NBA if they don't find something and produce quickly enough. So I'm very positive and hopeful about Jahlil Okafor, but we've got to see more out of Solomon Hill. That's a definite problem if he continues down this road.
All right, Kevin, I'm going to search for a hot take here as I get a question from Mon Christian. He says, who do you guys like most out of the tryout guys to make the team? And we've got a couple more questions from our guys along the same path. And here's what I'm trying to steer you towards. There's a lot of guys coming in here that we really didn't give too much attention to, of course, referring to McCoy, the Williams brothers, Garland Green, as well as Darius Morris. And now as we observe guys like Shek Diallo, somebody who we thought 100%, not necessarily 100%, but somewhere around 75 to 80%. They spent 2 second-round picks to get him. They've been developing him slowly. Obviously, he's only been playing competitive basketball now for, I want to say, 4 or 5 years. He'd only been playing for 2 years before his freshman year at Kansas, in which he didn't get a whole lot of run. And now I think he's approaching his third season in New Orleans. Is he a guarantee or slam dunk to make the roster at this point, Kevin? Because if he doesn't, there's only 12 that we can really solidly say are going to be on that opening night roster. Jarrett Jack would make 13. And then all of a sudden, you've got 2 spots up for grabs for the rest of these guys.
Well, I think Troy Williams will make the roster for sure. I also think that Garland Green has a good shot at either making the roster or at least being the two-way player, just because of the kind of glue guy that he is. He's valuable to have around the team to insert for a small minutes where he's not going to hurt you defensively. Same thing with Troy Williams. He's also a very good defender and, you know, an active athletic guy. He gets a lot of hustle stats. So I think he's another kind of guy that you want around that you can just plug in and you know he's not going to hurt you, at least defensively. When you put him on the floor. As far as Cech, he's been a huge disappointment. You know, we all love him as a person. He's super fun to, he has a great personality. He's super exciting. He has this athleticism. He has this charm about him that you just want him to succeed. And I mean, we want all these guys to succeed because they're Pelicans and, you know, all of that. But he's a guy that you really are rooting for, and he's just not putting it together. I mean, that he was terrible defensively against the Bulls. And that to me, you know, when we were asked that question of whether Okafor's injury affects his standing on the roster, it doesn't, because Cech was so bad that you have to have Okafor around. You need to have that other guy. There is a world where I could see him being released. I think the staff likes him. I think they believe in him still, and they're hoping that he can turn the corner. And I think it's going to be a tough cut for them just because of how much they like him. But I could see it being made for basketball decisions because, you know, some of these other guys can start to shine, and he's definitely falling behind. He's regressing instead of progressing. And, you know, that's a problem. And then I want to go back a little bit to Ollie's talk about Solomon Hill. And one thing I will say about him is I felt like for a lot of the game, he was put in a position where it wasn't his to his benefit because he was playing a lot of small ball four. And I just don't think that's a position that he's cut out to play, because he's not a great rebounder, and he's not strong enough to handle some of the bigger guys. And he was getting worked by those bigger guys. And then when you're getting worked like that and, you know, you're struggling a bit, he's a guy that needs confidence on offense, and your confidence is getting busted on the one thing that you're supposed to be good at. And so that's definitely going to trickle into his offensive game. Now, I'm not saying he's going to turn it around and be great, or, you know, I still have hope and belief in him that he'll be an adequate player, but I can see him being passed up by Troy Williams for minutes also, because I'm not sure right now that Solomon Hill is an upgrade over Troy Williams. I think there's a world where he is, and I'm hoping he gets there, because I really like Solomon Hill. He's a very good interview. He seems like a really, you know, like he's a really smart guy, and I feel like he works hard, and I like listening to him talk, and I want him to succeed, especially with that contract that we have. But he hasn't shown us much yet, and I know it's early coming back from an injury, and he definitely has a lot of rust, and he definitely is probably in his own head right now trying to get back to basketball speed. So I'm not going to judge him too harshly yet, but I don't think that Bulls game was really a game that he can be fairly judged on, because with Okafor going down and with Mirotić not playing and with AD and Randall playing them a lot of minutes that you wanted to give them, he was forced to play a role that he's not going to play and shouldn't be playing.
Yeah, and I think that works out great for Cech Diallo, because if you can't utilize somebody like Solomon Hill at the four, then that makes him even more critical to the team, because after, you know, Anthony Davis, Julius Randle, Nikola Mirotić, obviously Mirotić might get some run at the three. I'd prefer he stay at the four, but, you know, you don't know what you're going to get long term from Jahlil Okafor or Alexis Ejinsa. And with that being said, if Dell Demps does need help signing a future big man who can play the four or the five, I see that Vlade Divac has a scouting manual on his desk. So Dell Demps might want to take that into account and call his good friend Vlade. Let's get back to some questions, Ollie. This one's from MC Tumim. He says, why is Kendrick Williams being discounted? Looks like the only guy with that who brings a little bit of everything, assists, rebounds, blocks, etc. And then our friend Andy Coyer says, what do you think we used the last two-way on? Someone like a Brandon McCoy or a small forward type like the Williams brothers or Garland Green, as Kevin Berrios mentioned? What do you think, Ollie?
Well, I don't think it's going to be Brandon McCoy for several reasons. One, he hasn't been with the team very long, so his odds of just making grabbing that two-way were already, you know, kind of a long shot when you consider these small forwards have been working with the team for, I think, roughly 2 months, I was told. So these guys have been in town for a while, trying really hard to prove themselves and make the team. And obviously they've learned what the Pelicans like to do, both offensively and defensively, and it showed. I mean, McCoy looked awful, I thought. Again, when I finally got to tune in the Hawks game, I saw nothing but the terrible third and fourth quarter. So there was nothing positive to take away from that, and I was hoping to see something positive out of these young guys. and the one I saw the least from was McCoy. So I just don't like his odds. He just seemed to not have that aggressiveness. He looked, you know, he got his, I think his first shot was rejected, maybe his first two, and then he had a turnover, a silly turnover too. So he just looked completely out of sorts. So you can't think he's going to make it. But I think it's going to go to the one that's small fours. Like I said, when you've got these guys in here for 2 months busting their butts, and you've seen good glimpses out of all three of them, but I still prefer Troy Williams. And again, I go back to what I saw in training camp, but it just really showed that not only did the coaching staff seem to trust him more by placing him with the starters at times, you know, he's kind of that fifth guy rotated in. I never saw Garland Green do that, and never saw Kendrick Williams in that position either. And then in the game, I feel like Troy Williams provides, he's kind of the most versatile all-around guy as to where, on both ends of the floor, as to where you can kind of trust him to be able to do everything that's necessary, but he may obviously not do it because he's a young guy, he's yet to be proven in the league. As where Kendrick Williams, I mean, I guess M. Truman's right, when he's kind of just look at the stats and maybe just a few plays, he shined, but when I look at how he performed in those scrimmages against the competition overall, he kind of was just very quiet, and he waited for the offense to come to him. Kind of like Garland Green, who has significantly cooled since we saw him, guys, in the summer league. You know, his jumper's just not falling. He's gotten to the line a few times and kind of been physical or taking it, the ball aggressively and physically to the rim. But other than that, that outside sweet jumper, man, that we saw, it's just missing in action right now. So I don't really like his odds either, because he really hasn't done anything else to grab your attention as to where he deserves a contract to be signed to at least a two-way deal. So no, I'm going to stick with the guy I've always kind of, you know, thought that would make it. And then after seeing him, I still think the second two-way contract is going to go to, and that's Troy Williams.
All right. And that's a nice segue, because Andy Coyer has a second question. You can tell he's been listening to the podcast, because he said, I think small forward is still an issue. I would love to see Kevin's boy Blossom game and or a trade for Korksma. I think Kyle Kuzma is a bit improbable just based on how much the Lakers value him. Sorry, were you going to say something, Kevin?
He's talking about Kormaz, I think, from Philly.
Oh, gotcha. He's probably going to make the roster as well, somebody that they've been developing for some time. But that's pretty funny. I don't know why I thought Korksma was in relation to Kuzma. But go ahead, take it away, Kevin. And what are your thoughts on these two guys?
I mean, I love Blossom game. If there is a way, you know, the Spurs, he's still not signed to a contract there. I don't believe last I looked pretty recently. And so they just own his rights, and you can't do anything except for trade for him until they renounce his rights. So I would love to have him over here. I think he's a very solid player. I think he's very active. I think he can play a lot of positions defensively. I think he fits in with the way this team wants to play. He's very athletic. He can run. He can handle a little bit. He's not a great shooter. But, you know, we have already heard Elvin Gentry say they're not necessarily looking for great shooters. They're looking for good basketball players. And I would say that Jerron Blossom game is a good basketball player from what I've seen of him. So if they were able to get him somehow, I would be ecstatic. Kormaz, I've always sort of been interested in him, and I think he's just sort of he's been scoring a little bit too much. And like in summer league, he had like a 40-point game, I think. And I think I saw he scored 18 the other night in the preseason. And
against the Magic, yeah.
Yeah, and so like Philly's bench isn't what it used to be, because they lost Ilyasova and they lost Bellinelli. So I don't think there's a way that you could get Kormaz without overpaying for him. So I don't see him coming over here at the moment. I think the only thing I would counter to what Ollie was saying earlier is I think Troy Williams is on the regular season roster. I don't think he's a two-way player. I think they got him locked in. I think he's a real legit NBA player, and I think he's going to be on that roster. So then it comes down to Green, the other Kendrick Williams, and that's basically it for that we have on the roster right now competing for that two-way spot, because I seriously doubt it goes to Darius Morris or McCoy as well.
All right, let's get to some of our questions. I know you guys have to run soon, so let's try to get through these pretty quickly. Ollie, this is from Hot Pelican Takes again. Thank you so much for your questions, you guys, once more. What are the chances the Pelicans are a top 10 offensive and defensive team this season?
What did they finish? They finished roughly ninth defensively last year and about 14th, I think, overall offensively last year. Correct me if I'm wrong, guys. But, yeah, they were in the ballpark. And what do I want to say? Yeah, they kind of took a step back from what I heard somebody say after Boogie went down. But that's not necessarily true. If you just eliminate, I think, about six games right after DeMarcus went down. And to me, I've made this claim ever since it happened, is the team went in a total funk, and you could see it in their effort level. So I kind of just discount those games. But everything that followed afterwards, but of course that's counting all the good stuff, the highs, but from February 10th and on, Pelicans finished 20-8. And I know they had about a top five defense, and their offense was about 11th or 12th. So if you go by that play, then yes, I mean, it's within sight of both sides of the ball being top 10 or better. Now, will they do it? That's another question. You, I mean, you've got to look at the competition in the West, and it's ridiculous. And so the Pelicans are going to play every team in the West three or four times this season, with most of them being very difficult matchups. I mean, there's only a few cupcakes. So that heavily factors and influences a team's offensive and defensive ranking. But I kind of like that they'll probably be more around the top 15. I would be more confident in saying. Yeah, but top 10, wow, that would be great. If they do that, then you're looking at probably a three or a four seed.
Ollie, I'm proud of you, man. You nailed it perfectly. Offensively, they were rated 10th. Defensively, they were rated 14th. In terms of points per game, they were third, and they were 29th in defensive points per game, but that also is attributed to their pace, where they were first in the NBA. Let's move along, Kevin. This is the second question from Tejeda. He says, do you think the pace the Pels are trying to play at will... Sorry, let me try to read this again. I'm going to try to amend some of it. Do you think the pace the Pels are playing will cause any major issues defensively rebounding? What problems could reveal themselves as the Pelicans continue to run faster and faster?
Well, I mean, I don't think the pace is going to affect them. I mean, obviously more points are going to be scored because there's going to be more possessions. That's just understandable. But in terms of actual defensive effectiveness, I don't think the pace that they play at is going to hinder them. One thing is that Alvin Gentry is not a fan of crashing the offensive glass. So that could help in transition defense. I don't know, because he asked a question about rebounding. So I'm not sure about what angle he was going with there. But I don't expect to see a lot of us rated pretty highly on offensive rebounds, because that's not been the mandate since Gentry got here. So I think the transition defense should stay solid. And I think because they assembled a group of varied defenders that can cover multiple positions, I think you're going to see an improvement in defense. And I would like to just like flip the last person's question a little bit and ask Ollie, what do you think, and you also, Preston, do you think the Pelicans will be rated higher defensively or offensively this season?
I'm going to think that they're going to be better offensively. I think that when you're adding Julius Randle and Elfrid Payton, you're risking that the defense is going to slip. Now, granted, the effort you expect to be there and everything else, but overall, I mean, yeah, we've got Drew Holiday and Anthony Davis. I still think that they're just better additions for the offense, where we're going to maintain that pace, where we're going to destroy teams through that pace. And then with the talent we have, I don't see how they don't end up in the top 10 unless the three-point shooting is in the bottom third of the league. If it's just at least average and they get it to the free throw line a decent amount of time, they're going to be in the top 10 offensively. As for defensively, there's a lot more questions.
I think they're actively making that decision whenever they insert Etuan Moore into the starting lineup at small forward. They know his limitations at that position in terms of his size. And they also know what a deadly three-point shooter he is and how he spaces the floor. And he's also got that nice runner. He even busted out a Euro step the other night. So I think they're actively making that decision to push themselves offensively. Of course, if you find somebody a little bit more defensively inclined, like a Salomon Hill, if he can, you know, get back to his 2015-16 form, then I would definitely say defensively. But with that being said, I think that what Ollie's saying in terms of Elfrid Payton's effort, we know that he has better size and strength that Rajon Rondo does at this point of his career. And we also know that Julius Randle is going to buy in every single day the same way that Nikola Mirotic did in the paint last season. We saw how the defense improved with Mirotic down low, taking on those big-bodied players so that Anthony Davis could do what he does best, which is rim protect, kind of roam, get out to the perimeter, but also help defend in the paint. So I could definitely see both things happening. But with that being said, Etuan Moore, I think, is the linchpin right there. I'm going to go ahead and close this up. I know you guys have to run. I'm going to give some good-natured fun to our good friend of the pod, Ralph Malbro of Saints at Saints Forecast is where you can find them. They've got the best Saints podcast in town. Highly recommend Saints Happy Hour, along with our friend Andrew Juge, Kevin, as well as Dave hasn't been on there in a while, but shout out to him. He says, was Frank Johnson Norm hurt, or does putting on a Pelican uniform weaken one's bone structure? I'll ask Kevin.
Well, first off, you know, considering that NBA TV left Frank Jackson completely off the Pelicans depth chart, I would say that Ralph has a career over there at NBA TV for not getting Frank Jackson, the darling of the offseason's name, correct. So that goes back to, you know, what we're talking about is breakout surprise players this season, Frank Jackson. But to answer his question, honestly, he missed most of his college career because of injury. So he is a guy who came over with injury concerns. So it's nothing new that he's struggling with that as a Pelican as well.
All right, let's go ahead and wrap it up. We've had a good podcast here. I think we've been going close to an hour. That's all the time we have for now. Remember to give us a follow on the Bird Rights, guys, if you don't already. I know that many of you are already, you know, the Bird Rights subscribers. You check the page every day, but a lot of people are also listening to us on the OTG network, the Up and Under network, Dash Radio, as well as Nothing But Net. So make sure you guys are also following our content over there, as well as following the Bird Calls on both iTunes and Spreaker. Make sure you give us a rating and subscribe there. You can follow all of us at Ali Cosell, at Kevin B for Balance, and at Preston Ellis on Twitter. Before I let you go, Ali, I know you've been attending a lot of practices. Pretty soon the Pelicans are going to be back in the Smoothie King Center, and you're going to be able to interview some of these guys and get some more stories going. But in the meantime, what does the Bird Rights have coming out this week you want our listeners to know about?
No, I just wanted to say that tomorrow, SB Nation, all the team preview sites are going to be posting. So we're going to be posting our big season preview tomorrow, roughly around 10 in the morning. So look for that.
Nice. Kevin, I know you're working on something pretty big. Want to tell our listeners about it?
Yeah. So I'm working on, a roster overview, looking at player personalities and philosophies based off of birth dates and times that stem from this belief system called Human Design, which incorporates the I Ching and astrology and some modern science beliefs. It's a little bit out there. It's not necessarily my thing, but I'm also always interested in hearing new thoughts. And my partner in season tickets, Travis, is really interested in that. So I'm getting him to work with me on it. And it is pretty interesting. Some of the findings seem to reflect what you expect what we know about the players on our roster already. So there is some things that make a lot of sense. And it is pulling up a lot of interesting points as we go through the roster and looking at their charts and how their energy flows and all of those things, which is, you know, like I said, it's a little bit out there, but it's a fun look, you know. But it could also be one of those things how whenever you read your horoscope, it applies to you because it's written so vaguely that you believe that you could see how it's fitting the situation you're in now, kind of thing. So I don't put a whole lot of stock in it, but it's just a little fun exercise and something a little bit different and unique to dissect.
Always unique, Mr. Kevin Berrios. Thank you guys so much for sticking with us. We are now well into our second year of podcasting with the Bird Calls here at SB Nation's TheBirdRights.com. So just want to give a big shout out to all of you. Thank you for continuing to tune in. Thank you for your questions. Thanks for the retweets, the likes on iTunes, all that good stuff. We really appreciate each and every one of you. And if there is anything you want to hear about, make sure you hit one of us up and we will address it on the next pod. We're going to start podding a bit more regularly as the regular season kicks in. But for now, I'm your host, Preston Ellis. Let's go, Pels. Thank you for listening to The Bird Calls on the Off the Glass, Nothing But Net, and 5x5 Podcast Networks. If you like what you're hearing, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes, retweet, share with your friends, and most importantly, subscribe today.
And now, an ad from Dad.
All right, save money on car insurance when you bundle home and auto with Progressive.
Can I take these off?
All right.
What is this? This looks good.
Wow.
That's well made.
Where did you get this? I'm talking to you, with the hair. Yeah, where did you get this? It's good stuff.
That's solid. That's not veneer. That's solid stuff.
Progressive can't save you from becoming your parents, but we can save you money when you bundle home and auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Discounts not available in all states or situations. And now, an ad from Dad.
All right. Save money on car insurance when you bundle home and auto with Progressive.
Can I take these off?
All right. What is this? This looks good.
Wow. That's well made.
Where did you get this? I'm talking to you with the hair. Yeah, where did you get this? It's good stuff. That's solid. That's not veneer. That's solid stuff.
Progressive can't save you from becoming your parents, but we can save you money when you bundle home and auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Discounts not available in all states or situations.